we are going to see billions with a B of robots out there. So think about it this way. There are 8 billion people on this planet, right? And, you know, 30 million robots, as big as it is, it's not even 0.5% of 0.5%, right? Of the population. So we are, you know, in this exponential growth right now.
Are robots soon to be part of our everyday life in hotels, restaurants, airports, everywhere? Hello and welcome to Tech First. My name is John Gutierre. First time I saw a robot in a hotel, it was in Japan. It was more than a decade ago. It might have been 15 years ago. It was mostly a toy, but it was cool. Question is that changing? And where are robots close to actually delivering business value? To chat, we have Elad Inbar. He's the CEO of Robot Lab. They've deployed tens of thousands of robots and businesses over the last 15 years. Welcome, Elad. How are you?
Thank you, John. Thanks for having us.
Hey, super pumped to have this conversation. Let's start with a super big picture. We're going to get into the details, where you deliver robots, what they do, how much they cost, payback periods, all that stuff. But let's start with the really, really big picture. It's really early days in terms of robotics. There's cool stuff. There's amazing stuff. What kind of future do you envision when you look forward? Maybe it's 10 years, maybe it's 20, I'm not sure, but what kind of future do you envision robots and humans working together?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I always love to start from, you know, the big picture, because especially in technology, it's very hard to, you know, comprehend the pace of changes. And, you know, we all, you know, remember the, you know, the first, you know, mobile phone, the Motorola with the shoulder strap, right? This was launched somewhere in the late...
I don't know
late...
if we all remember that, not all, but okay.
We know all it, okay.
Yes.
But anyways, it was launched roughly in the late 80s. And a decade later, by the late 90s, everyone already had a mobile phone. The same happened with a smartphone, right? From the time... you know, the, you know, Android, the iPhone was launched, you know, until everyone has a smartphone, it's roughly a decade. Same with internet penetration, the same with laptops and so on and so on. And I believe today we are roughly in the second or third year of the robot decade. So although we, you know, we kind of like not really see that everywhere, I can tell you based on the International Robotics Association, there are around 30 million commercial robots out there. I'm not talking about the Roombas and, you know, the residential robots. I'm talking about commercial cleaning, delivery, you know, factory robots and these kind of things. And 30 million robots, it's a pretty, you know, large number by itself. Mm-hmm. But if you consider, again, the you know, the decade that is, you know, upon us, that we are going from basically zero, you know, products out there to almost 100% penetration, okay, we are going to see billions with a B of robots out there. So think about it this way. There are 8 billion people on this planet, right? And, you know, 30 million robots, as big as it is, it's not even 0.5% of 0.5%, right? Of the population. So we are, you know, in this exponential growth right now. And that's actually, you know, something that we see in our number. That's, you know, why we decided to grow in a certain way, you know, using a franchise model. We can talk about that later. Because we get demand from so many different places that need to have robots today, right now, and we just can't be everywhere all the time. So when we look at the, you know, the horizon, what's coming, I can just refer to one, you know, person, Elon Musk. A couple of weeks ago, we had earnings, you know, call with, you know, the Tesla shareholders, and he said that they're going to deploy 1 billion with a B. 1 billion of their Optimus robot, the humanoid robot, by the end of 2030. So this is something that, you know, just one company with one single robot, you're going to do 1 billion products. Okay.
Well, I'll believe that when I see that. Elon Musk also told me that I could buy a Tesla and it would be making money self-driving as a taxi about 2015 or something like that. So I'll believe that when I see that. But I have talked
to
investors behind Figure.ai, which is, you know, a humanoid robot company that will compete with Optimus. And I've talked to the executives with Aptronic and many others as well. And many of them are saying, hey, you know what? We expect the numbers of humanoid robots to be roughly equivalent to or surpass the human population at some point.
Exactly.
So that point in general is not tremendously controversial in the robotics community, at least.
Exactly. And it's important, you know, for, I think, people that are not from the industry to understand, you know, what's coming, because again, we can't even comprehend that within, you know, a decade. And let's say Elon Musk is, you know, wrong by 5 years. Okay. We're talking about, you know, again, it's not like, you know, 50 years from now, 100 years from now, it's in our lifetime. Okay. We're Yes. going to have, you know, as you said, more people, more robots than people. Right. And, you know, how our lives are going to change, you know, as a result of that, how, you know, the service industry, the, you know, entertainment industry, the, you know, manufacturing and so on are going to change. And this is something that, again, we have to take a step back and look at, you know, this overarching, you know, trend that is happening in the industry.
It raises so many questions, and people, let's say normal people, people who aren't in technology, right, are already dealing with so much future shock, right? You know, they're already dealing with so much change and change of this scale, and change that impacts potentially their wages, how they make their livelihood, all that sort of thing, is going to be a tsunami, absolute tsunami. Okay, we're going to get into where you're delivering them now, what verticals, what you see growing, all that stuff, but kind of let's continue at the high level because it's been interesting.
Yeah.
I want to talk about, as we enter that reality of robots entering the workforce, and maybe they're hospitality, maybe they're delivery, you know, and maybe eventually they're humanoid and they're actually doing some interesting things in a factory or in a warehouse or something like that. How do you see robots and humans working together? I mean, there's lots of options, right? One human, one robot, take the job. One human, yeah. one robot, help with the job. One human, one robot, do something so that you could do the job with significantly greater quality, right? And there's many more scenarios as well. How do you see it?
So let's start with where we are today. You know, we at Robot Lab and, you know, other, you know, company manufacturers and everything, we're helping mainly business owners to automate tasks that people don't want to do anymore. Okay, that's where we are today, right? I mean, you know, people don't want to clean floor, don't want to, you know, vacuum corridors for 8 hours a day. People don't want to, you know, run, you know, dirty dishes back to the dishwashing station. These are tasks that still need to be done. You know, we are hearing even from school administrators, janitors are retiring. Okay. And, you know, there is no new generation that wants to come and, you know, clean the school, you know, facilities every day, but they still need to clean the floor every single day. So this is where, you know, where we are today. And, you know, my observation is that, you know, it happened, you know, for many years, even before COVID, but COVID kind of like accelerated that, in which, if you think about it, COVID happened almost 4 years ago, right? I mean, I believe in a week or two from now, is 4 years, you know, celebration, since we went, we were all sent home to flatten the curve, right? right. It was mid-March, roughly. And what happened is, if you think about it, people that were at these entry level, you know, jobs 4 years ago, they moved on, right? They are 4 or 5 years into their careers. They want, you know, higher paying jobs, they want more responsibility. They want to build a family and, you know, start, you know, buying their home and so on. They don't want to do the entry level jobs anymore. And the new generation that's supposed to, you know, just step into these entry level jobs, they were in eighth grade when COVID hit, right? So they never experienced, you know, childhood the way that we experienced that, right? They never walked at the, you know, Burger King flipping burgers or, you know, doing all these summer jobs. Everything that they know is around, you know, being online, being at home. So DoorDash and Uber Eats and trading crypto on Robinhood. This was their, you know, their entire, you know, growing, right? Growing up, right? As high schoolers. So, you know, they finish, you know, high school, they, you know, I'm ready to go to the workforce. Okay. I'm going to my first job. And, you know, the business owner is just like, oh, that's your first job. Awesome. $12 an hour, take this broomstick and start, you know, working on there. Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, I'm not going to do that. Right. I never did that. Why would I need to do that? So this is the gap that happened. These people moved on. These people are not willing to step in. Okay, so robots today need to help business owners operate where people don't want to do these jobs anymore. And that's where we are today. We have, delivery robots that are helping in restaurants, in hotels, room service robots, and so on. We have cleaning robots that are designed to clean, large spaces. Think about, ballroom in a hotel, all the corridors, of course, multiple floors. Warehouses, car dealerships, and supermarkets, and so on. And we have customer service robots because that's also one of the largest challenges right now is people don't want to talk to people. They don't want to do customer service because everyone has attitude from both sides, customers and their representatives, right? And, robots can actually offer the way of, providing customer service, providing information in a consistent way. So these are, the robots that we see today. We have also cooking robots and these kind of things because the same problem happened in the back of the house as well. Line cooks are in great shortage right now.
I had a conversation. It's got to be half a year ago now. Actually, it was December 8th, 2020. I just looked it up on my own website here with Miso Robotics, the founder, Buck Jordan. They make Flippy, the burger flipping robot.
Yep.
And he was saying that he was talking to restaurant owners and they had nobody who would come in and flip the burgers, flip the fries, all that stuff. White Castle, big chain in the U.S. for burgers and stuff, did a big pilot project around this. I didn't hear how it went or they kept it or anything, but they had similar issues bringing in low-cost labor to make fast food.
Yes, exactly. So this is where, robots are today, right? We have a need, businesses still need to operate. And people are not willing to do that. So robots step in, to help with the few that do show up to work. So that's kind of like it is. I mean, think about yourself. Yeah. How many times you sit in a restaurant, okay, and you ask for the check, right? I mean, you raise your hands, like, hey, can I get the check? And the server was just a second. I'm just running over there. I'll be back in a second. And, it's been 5, 7, 10 minutes. And, she keeps running back and forth. And, she didn't forget you, but she's very, very busy. And why is that? Because the few that do show up to work are overworked. Okay, they cannot provide the level of service that we as customers expect them. And for every minute that, pass on, when we wait for the check, their tip amount is, shrinking, right? Because why are we giving tips? For the level of service, right? And if we don't get service, this gets smaller and smaller. And what we are seeing in every restaurant that we deployed or a service robot, a delivery robot, the servers can stay in the dining room and these robots save them all the running back and forth to the kitchen. So with the servers staying in the dining room, their tips actually increase because, if I run out of water, they refill it immediately. If I drop my fork, they bring me a new one immediately. If I need the check, they'll be there in 2 minutes, right? And this kind of service is what we are looking for. We live in a first world, right? We have enough food at home. We go to the restaurant for the service, right? Not for a real need, right? For food. So, if we get the service, we will recommend the place. We will, come back. So it's a positive cycle that just contributes to the business.
So that's a good segue then to talk about where you're delivering robots the most right now. What are the biggest sectors? And then we'll talk about the growth rates as well.
Yeah. So restaurants by far right now, all over the place. It doesn't matter if it's a, full service restaurant or quick serve or whatnot. Any restaurant owner is struggling with the same thing. Finding people and making people show up. Because even if you have people, they just don't show up.
Right. So the robot that you're selling into a restaurant is what you mentioned, it's delivery, right? It's bringing stuff out. What's that look like? What's the form factor? I'm guessing it's on wheels. I'm guessing the top is a tray. I'm guessing it has some kind of screen and maybe some kind of talking capability. Yeah.
So RobotLab is a unique company in which we don't manufacture the robots. We used to manufacture robots in the past, but we stopped doing that. Today, we are partnering with the largest manufacturers from all around the world. So for example, we are the exclusive partner for LG. Robots, across the North and Latin America. So we bring their robots to the market, but, we are, partners with other manufacturers as well. So Typically, these robots will have shells, you know, a couple of wheels, sensors that they can navigate around obstacles, around people, and these kind of things. But not every robot is the same. There are different, you know, use cases which will require different types of robots. I'll give you a couple of examples. So let's say you are, you know, a small bistro kind of restaurant, right? And, you know, everything is packed, you know, people are sitting, you know, close to each other. You'll need a smaller robot with a smaller footprint that can navigate, you know, between these, you know, different chairs and so on, compared to, let's say, IHOP, you know, type of restaurant where you have, you know, large parties. Typically it's, you know, parents and grandparents and kids and everything and large plates, right? So a small mm-hmm. robot that can, you know, navigate between chairs is not going to fit enough tables, enough plates to bring to the table. In an IHOP type of restaurant. So not every robot can do the same thing. Another example, if you're a Vietnamese pho restaurant, so you serve giant bowls of boiling, you know, liquid, right? You need superb suspension. We actually have, you know, one of the manufacturers have a drive pattern that, you know, when the robot drives, it actually has great suspension, but it also, as it slows down, it actually leans backward, making sure that liquid won't spill, you know, out of the bowls. Because they are focused on this type of food, so not every robot is you know, the best fit for every restaurant, and that's what we do. Our team actually partner with the customers, and we ask them a lot of questions about, you know, their environment, their food, their kitchen, their floor, their, you know, width between the tables, the aisle width between the tables, and so on. And based on all of that, we recommend the right product that will be successful in their environment. So these are, you know, generally speaking, delivery.
How does that work? How does that work at the table? Does the robot come up and say, hey, here's your food, and you have to grab it off the robot? Does a server come by and put it on the plate? How does that work?
So that's a great question, because again, not every restaurant is the same, right? If I go to a Chick-fil-A, for example, you know, it's a fast restaurant, like McDonald's for those who don't know. You know, it's okay if the robot comes next to me and I take the tray and put it on the table. Actually, I don't expect any more service than that. And it's pretty cool that I was served by a robot, right? But if I go to a high-end, you know, steakhouse or something, you know, fine dining restaurant, I don't want to take the plate by myself. Because again, we are paying for the service. I want the server to present the food to me and say, hey, Mr. John, here's your steak, medium rare, the way that you ask for it. Would you like some extra salt and pepper, right? So in that case, the robot needs to be in a holding position. Okay, just like where they put the foldable tables with the giant, you know, trays that they bring, the robot is in a holding position. The server takes the food from there and presents to the guests, right? Because, you know, in that type of environment, it's not acceptable that the guests will, you know, take the food. Yeah. So we are working with the restaurant owners. We have different standard operating procedures for different types of restaurants, just to match the, you know, the level of service that, you know, they want to provide to their guests. With the right technology. But in either way, okay, the server stay with the guests, and that's the purpose. Okay, because the server needs to serve the guests, right? Not to run back and forth. Yep. This can be automated.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. So restaurants is a big growth area. What other verticals are significant growth areas right now?
The other vertical that we see a lot of demand is in cleaning. The entire cleaning industry. It can be hotels, again, restaurants, assisted living facilities, very, very, you know, in high demand right now. They all, you know, suffer from labor shortages, and they can't clean, you know, enough of, you know, their facility because they don't have people, they don't have the manpower to do that. So, you know, we have, for example, some of our customers, assisted living facilities with 200 rooms, they have one cleaning lady. One.
Wow, that's okay. Impossible.
It's hard. It's hard on her because she can't do everything. Okay, she can't touch the entire facility every day, right? And you know, it affects their, you know, cleaning less, you know, score and all of that. So, you know, when we introduce robots, today, by the way, cleaning robots are mainly for public spaces. We don't have yet robots that can clean rooms or, you know, bathrooms and these kind of things. But, you know, even helping with public spaces, all the corridors, the ballrooms, the, you know, dining area, reception area, and all of that, we're talking about, you know, hours per day. We're talking about, you know, tens and, you know, hundreds of thousands of square feet at the end of the day. So this is a great help for them.
I assume retail is another interesting area as well. I think it was Walmart that recently did a pilot project with a stock sensing robot.
Yeah.
Going down the aisles, what's low, what needs to be replaced, all that sort of thing.
Yeah. So there were a few attempts in the past few years by different companies to do the stock keeping robots. As far as I'm aware, most of them are still in the pilot phase or, you know, were discontinued.
Mm-hmm.
The reason is that the way that it works, the robot basically has a like a long, you know, post with cameras and, you know, just take pictures of all the items on the shelves. And in many cases, you know, the associates at the store bring, let's say, you know, there is only one box of cereal, you know, left, right? So the associates bring that to the front of the shelf. Right.
And it's full. No problem.
Exactly. So, you know, the robot can't see behind that. So that's a problem that was still not solved. So, you know, most of these are still in early phase. I'm not familiar with any successful deployment of these type of robots. But when it comes to cleaning, you know, Walmart as an example, or, you know, any supermarket, right? I mean, cleaning their floors, either on a consistent basis, or, you know, it just goes up and down. To clean, or, you know, milk was spilled in, you know, aisle four, right? So someone needs to get there. Mm. Send the robot, let the robot clean that. You know, instead of, you know, taking a cashier or someone else that is doing something more important. So this kind of thing, automating.
Like actually helping a customer. Exactly. Like actually helping a customer. I mean, trying to get help where in one of these stores is really, really challenging.
Yeah.
Most of these jobs that you're talking about are jobs that don't require a significant amount of engagement with humans. They require safety protocols. You need to get around humans. You need to be careful where humans are, but they don't involve a lot of interaction with humans. Where do you see that coming in? Is it coming in already? And if so, where? And do you see technologies like LLMs, GPT-4, that sort of thing being important in that?
Yeah. So, on these types of robots that we discussed so far, you know, they have sensors and everything. They are safe around humans. You know, every time they have laser sensors and ultrasonic sensors and cameras and so on. So every time they detect motion or something, first, you know, rule is stop. Okay. Let, you know, the humans, you know, pass, and then, you can keep going. If, you know, the person stays there or the obstacle stays there, then, you know, replan, a path around that and try to find another way around that. So this is what these robots are doing today. And again, these robots, as you said, I mean, they're not, you know, talking to people, they're not engaging, they're not entertaining. Yeah, some of the delivery robots have, you know, birthday songs. So, you know, if they deliver the cake, they'll, you know, sing happy birthday, but that's fine. That's not an interactive kind of, a way to talk to customers and all of that. We have another section of robots that are designed to be customer facing, designed to answer questions, to talk about, you know, product services, about the location. I'm sure you're familiar with Pepper, humanoid robots from SoftBank Robotics. So this robot is designed to be, you know, a customer facing, to answer questions. It can actually speak and understand 26 different languages. So think about it as a concierge at a hotel. Okay, answering all these repetitive questions like when the airport shuttle leaves, what are the hours of the gym? Can you recommend restaurants around here? Can you recommend attractions for the kids? Right. So all these repetitive questions can be answered, you know, in a coherent way, constantly. It doesn't matter if it's 6 a.m. in the morning or, you know, close to midnight. You don't have, either missing employees that don't show up in the morning, or, you know, employees that talk back and, you know, bring, you know, attitude in a way, or, I mean, you're laughing, but that's, you know, reality. Or people that just sit on their social media on their phone in the back office for 2 hours and actually don't even, you know, occupy their station. So these are, you know, real stories that I'm hearing from, you know, from business owners. We even have these robots in assisted living facilities where they're helping, especially with people with dementia. You know, is a big issue right now because we don't have assisted living facilities, don't have enough therapists to work with, you know, the residents with dementia.
Yeah.
And, you know, these people wake up in the morning and they don't know why they're there, why they're not home, where is their spouse, where are the kids, you know, why I'm being held here. And, you know, they're not stupid. They just forgot, right? They just don't remember what's going on. So, you know, we need to go to them and just, hey, Mrs. Jones, you are here because you have a memory issue. We are here to help you. Your spouse will come you know, later this afternoon, your kids will be here and so on. Just try to ease them back, you know, into the daily life. And we don't have enough therapists to do that. And robots are great, you know, assistants because, you know, this type of robot, Pepper, for example, you know, can come over, can show on the tablet. It has a tablet on the chest. It can show pictures of their wedding day. We work with the families. We work with the, you know, facilities, you know, picture of their first child that was born and so on. And basically lower the level of stress because, you know, think about yourself. You wake up in the morning, I'm being held here. The door is locked. Why am I here? I want to go home. I want to go to my family. You know, you will not hold me here. And, you know, because we cannot talk to them, okay, they get frustrated, they get upset and, you know, sometimes violent. So they lock them in the room. We just accelerate this time. And this is not the way to treat, you know, the elderly. And robots are not judgmental. No. The robot will do that 50 times a day, right, without any problem. It's not like, hey, I told you 5 minutes ago. Can't you remember? It's not going to have this attitude or issue because it's a robot. And that's kind of like where customer-facing robots can, you know, help, you know, different types of people, right, from hotels all the way to assisted living facilities.
I saw a lot of that kind of robot at CES in January of this year, actually. And at the time, I was super skeptical. And I was like, okay, you're going to put this, like one that I saw sort of sits on a desk or a table or a counter or something like that, has a screen, not really a face, but sort of glowy eyes and sort of a mouth smile. I was like, come on. But I can totally see it. My mother has been diagnosed with dementia, and I can totally see it as something that would be incredibly helpful. And people like this come to need 24/7 care because they get up in the middle of the night and they go somewhere and they don't know where they are and they get lost and they get upset and they get scared. And we simply don't, even if you're paying $10,000 a month for a super amazing care facility, there just aren't enough people to be with them all the time. And you know what? As their kids, we're working, we have jobs, we have our own kids, we can't be there 24/7 either. So I think there is huge opportunity there. Okay. We've talked about a lot of the stuff that I wanted to get into. I wanted to maybe ask one question before we start to come to a close. Where do you see the biggest opportunity over the next few years? We talked about a couple different verticals. You talked about, you know, you think we're in the decade that robotics follows the path of the smartphone, follows the path of other technology that becomes ubiquitous in basically 10, 15 years or something like that. Where do you think are the biggest areas of opportunity?
So the biggest opportunity is actually in the service side of that. How do we enable business owners, okay, and you know, build their trust in this type of technology? That's the biggest opportunity. And this is something that we are working really, really hard to solve. You know, our goal, my goal to the team is basically to have Robot Lab offices in 100 metro areas by the end of next year. Okay, because when we think about it, let's take, you know, the car industry as an example. When, you know, everyone knows Henry Ford's biggest invention is the production line, right? The ability to, you know, produce the Model T in low cost and, you know, high volume and all of that. But everyone forgets another invention that probably was more important from Henry Ford, which is the car dealership model. Because let's say you are in, you know, Los Angeles, in San Diego. Okay, this guy, Henry Ford, is building cars, cheap cars, okay, in Michigan, right? I'm not going to buy it from Michigan because if it breaks in Los Angeles, what am I going to do? Am I going to, you know, carry it with a, you know, tow it with a horse, you know, all the way to Michigan to fix it, right? I need someone in my backyard that they can go down the street from me that can take care of me if something goes wrong, right? And this was the, in my mind, this was the pivot point that basically unlocked the potential because people want this technology. They want the benefit of the technology, but they are afraid from, you know, putting their money into this type of thing if they won't get service. So this is something that we are really, really focused on because I can guarantee our product portfolio in 5 years will look totally different than what it is today, right? With the, you know, the pace of innovation, the pace of changes, everything will change. Okay, look at, you know, our phones, our laptops. I mean, we keep upgrading them every other year, right? So these kind of things will change and we'll have new robots. And, you know, Optimus eventually in 15 years, not 10, will be there, right? But, you know, we will get this type of technologies that will enable things. But again, no one will buy Optimus, okay, in Reno, Nevada. Well, there is a Tesla in Reno, Nevada, in Tampa, Florida, right? No one will buy that if there is no service available, you know, down the street from it. So that's the biggest opportunity. How do we unlock that, you know, model where everyone feels comfortable enough to step into this, you know, new adventure, right? Of putting a robot in my business and relying on a robot, you know, for my business, you know, and to do that, I have to have someone to take care of me. So that's where, in my mind, at least, the biggest opportunity is.
That's super interesting. I was going to bring up a counterfactual. I was going to say, hey, Tesla doesn't have dealerships, but, you know, essentially they had to build dealerships because they needed to solve the service issue. And so they don't have enough. I know because I drive a Tesla.
Yes.
It's sometimes harder to get to them. But they had to essentially build that entirely themselves. And the cost of that, of course, is significant. Now, you mentioned earlier, you're doing a franchise model. That's a new one. Most people, they think about franchises, they think McDonald's, they think Wendy's, they think something like that, right? If you're doing a franchise model, that should help you grow quickly, I assume.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, you know, when we look at our company, we grew year over year. We're doing it for, 16 years, year after year, we grew. But we got to the point, you know, especially when you look at exponential growth, right? That the next step is so much, you know, bigger than where we are today. And we can't do it with our resources. We can't open, you know, 50 service centers around the country tomorrow. And we looked at different, you know, growth strategies and, you know, time and time again, the franchise model came to be the right model because we're talking about business owners, okay, that are passionate about, you know, the market, about the industry, about servicing, you know, customers. And, you know, they'll do everything in their power to be successful because, again, it's their business. We train them on everything that we know. We have all the training materials. We have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of hours of online learning system on every product that we provide. We have, on-site training. We have all the SOPs, the standard operating procedures and everything, but we're just missing the people on the ground. And, you know, marry these two together. Okay, this is basically an unstoppable machine. And I think this will, what will unlock the biggest potential here because, again, business owners are waiting to have someone down the street from them.
Super interesting. I want to thank you for taking this time and for having the interesting conversation.
Yeah, thank you for having me.